sports world keeps on turning. That's why we bring you Saturday Sports Talk. Kick your weekend off with the week's top headlines in sports. Get in the game by calling 656-9900 or toll-free at 1-866-656-9900. Star 99 is a free call for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. This is Saturday Sports Talk. Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
With Eric Kane, I'm Joel Silverberg.
656-9900 if you want to join us. Logan Ward producing this morning and being very judgmental, I might add, of his two show hosts. Logan, I need to give you a lot of credit because you're going back to school. You're going back to campus on Monday, but because of Martin Luther King, classes start on Tuesday. You have been fantastic the last 6 weeks.
No, thank you.
The month of December and the early part of January is when we have a lot of fill-in time. We've had, you know, people get sick unexpectedly. People decide, oh, I've got to take these days off. I haven't taken them yet. And just day of, you've been fantastic when we've called you and needed a producer. So that way Eric and I can fill in on the air. It's been super helpful because we've gone through a stretch the last couple of years where sometimes it is very difficult to find fill-ins. And you've come in and you've done a great job doing it, too. So your availability is one thing, but the fact that you've knocked it out of the park has been solid. MTSU's finest.
Thank you. And I love waking up from texts from you all every morning. Saying, hey, can you produce the Eric Kane Show at 9 o'clock? And it's 8:30.
I call you and wake you up.
That's true. You do.
Nah, good job, man. Thanks.
Thank you.
See, it's weird as I need you to wake up, but I don't want to call you because I don't want to wake you up, which is really counterproductive.
No, you're good. Just call and wake me up. I'll be
when
good.
I need you here. But we won't be able to do that during the week anymore because Logan's going back to school to get an education and try to be smart and stuff. He'll still be here, though, on Saturdays. Producing Saturday Sports Talk so we can make fun of him and you can make fun of him as well at 656-9900 because he's a Florida fan. So you can call him and make fun of him as you please. We allow it and we encourage it, but don't take up too much of his time. But it is 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, so let's rip it.
What's really grinding my gears, I want to piggyback on the social media thing.
It is the absolute worst thing that has came along in the last 20 years.
I don't need this. I don't want this.
I'm sorry that we didn't break down Tennessee's second-string linebacker for the 18th time this summer. Those are my grievances, Joel. I feel much better now, and I appreciate the forum.
Let's pump the brakes.
Ron Aiken's getting worked up over there.
Let me tell you. I followed it. I've looked it up.
The way you had Alabama on the ropes for the last 2 years in the national championship and the SEC championship to punch your ticket for another chance.
Georgia decided we're going to sit here and tweet about it. So I don't want to hear anything else about it. You swelled head fart knockers. 656-9900 if there's something you'd like to lay into. I'm sure there's a lot of it. I get ripped a lot. I don't actually, but I feel like people want to rip me. And that's okay. Eric Kane, what do you got?
Well, there's a couple of things you could go with this week. A lot of people doing a lot of dumb stuff. Odell Beckham Jr., just quickly, there should not be an arrest warrant out for you for simple battery, but you're such a moron. You're such an idiot. Get on with your life. No one cares about you. Seriously, when you act like that, no one gives a flip about you. You're annoying. We all hate watching you on television all the time. So until you improve yourself and you become a better citizen, just continue to, I don't want to say shut up and dribble because I don't believe that, but just continue to improve yourself because we can't stand you right now. And I hate you, to be quite frank. Moving on, Jessica Mendoza came out in wake of the Astros sign stealing scheme back in 2017. Mike Fiers, a couple months ago, is the one that brought it public and the investigation launched. And after a couple months, Rob Manfred comes out. He decides to suspend AJ Hinch, Astros manager, and Jeff Lue, now Astros general manager, for 1 year, dock the franchise $5 million, and dock the franchise each of its first and second round picks for the next 2 years. So you're telling me, in order to win a World Series, my franchise, all it has to be is dock $5 million, lose a couple draft picks, and a GM and a manager for a year? Sign me up. First of all, Rob Manfred, you're so soft. As Will West would say, S-A-W-F-T, swaft, Rob Manfred. But hey, John Coppapella would get a lifetime ban for sliding money under the table to international prospects. I know it's two different situations, but let's be consistent here. It makes no sense, Rob Manfred. So you're pretty bad. Number two, Jessica Mendoza comes out and is so critical of Mike Fiers, who has moved on, was with the A's now, but brought it out of lights a couple months ago, talking about, was warning his teammates when you're going into Houston that this is what they're doing. And she came out and said, I'm glad that the game of baseball is knowledgeable of this now so we can take action, because you're attacking the integrity of the game. But the way Mike Fiers did it, there's a better way to do it. Listen, the whistleblower is never popular. Never popular. But this is a problem in baseball that around the baseball circles, they've been known about. Someone just had to come out and say it and expose it. So Jessica Mendoza, who is an advisor for the New York Mets, who just had to part ways with Carlos Beltran because he's a part of this whole scheme before he managed his first game. Jessica Mendoza wants to come out and criticize Mike Fiers for having the courage to step up and say something about it. Pathetic, Jessica Mendoza, ESPN analyst, a part of Sunday Night Baseball. It's pathetic. She says that I'm not compromised. My opinions are not compromised. My thoughts are not compromised because of my role with the Mets. This is just me being me. I call BS on that. I don't believe you. It's really shady. This whole thing is awful. The Mets did the right thing. The Red Sox did the right thing. The Astros did the right thing. Credit Jeff Crane coming in and just saying, oh, okay, Rob Manfred, I see you. Hold my beer. Let me fire both Luna. Let me fire both Hinch. Let me start over. This whole thing is a mess. There's still other layers to uncover, but Jessica Mendoza made it uglier, and I thought it was quite erroneous, as I tweeted out just the other day. So, in a nutshell, Odell Beckham Jr., Jessica Mendoza, Rob Manfred, you guys all stink.
I'm ripping Bill O'Brien. You're up 24 to nothing.
That's a good one.
And you're up 24 to nothing. And you know that Kansas City, you're not going to shut this team out. So after Kaimi Fairbairn kicks a 31-yard field goal to make it 24 to nothing, which I wasn't really thinking missed opportunity. I was thinking, okay, good, you're padding the lead. But you're inside the 20-yard line. It's a red zone opportunity. You settle for a field goal. But hey, you're already up 21 to nothing. So you're up 24 to nothing in the second quarter. Kansas City goes down and scores in under a minute. Two plays, 42 yards after the big kickoff return. So it's 24 to 7. You still have a 17-point lead. Just don't give up any really major gaffes on defense. And on 4th and 4, with Houston having a 17-point lead in the second quarter and the ball at its own 31-yard line, Bill O'Brien opts to call a fake punt. And it doesn't work. Kansas City scored a touchdown less than 30 seconds later. Houston fumbled the ensuing kickoff return. Kansas City scored three plays after that. Houston stalled out on a drive at midfield. And then Kansas City marched 90 yards down the field and scored again. Houston lost a 24-point lead in a playoff game in a span of 9 minutes and 11 seconds. It's not that the Chiefs fought back and battled back and won the game. It was the Texans blew a 24-point lead in under 10 minutes. The Chiefs had the lead and control of the game by halftime. At that point, by the end of the third quarter, it was a matter of, can it be a comeback for Houston? I don't even consider it that great of a comeback from the Chiefs, because it wasn't a comeback. How can it be a comeback if you were leading at halftime and you never trailed again? Bill O'Brien has talent on that roster. You have guys like J.J. Watt. You have Deshaun Watson at quarterback. Carlos Hyde, decent running back for you this year. You have one of the best receivers in the league in DeAndre Hopkins and the other playmakers you have on that defense. And you have a 24 to nothing lead, and you're going to make a boneheaded coaching decision on top of the other miscues, and your team just gives the game away. Not to mention three more failed fourth down conversion attempts in the second half, unable to take advantage of opportunities. The first team in history to be leading by 20 points in a playoff game and lose that same playoff game by 20 points. The Chiefs were held scoreless through the first 15 minutes of the game, the first 20 minutes of the game, and scored 51 points in that football game. And Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes tore the Texans defense apart. Bill O'Brien, that's on you. It's one thing for the Chiefs to go out and score a lot of points. you should never lose a playoff game to anybody when you have a 24-point cushion in the second quarter. And that fake punt really derailed all the momentum you had worked so hard to build. Play field position. What had happened in that game so far is that the defense had gotten stops. The Chiefs got one kickoff return that led to a quick score, and you decided that that was the rule, not the exception, up to that point in the game. You didn't trust your defense. You tried to roll the dice. It didn't work. Your team lost for it. I don't know how much longer Bill O'Brien's going to be the coach in Houston, because Deshaun Watson and J.J. Watt, those talents are too good to not at least make the AFC Championship game with. And right now, Bill O'Brien's underachieving when it comes to the postseason. That's Rip It. Play it every Saturday morning here on Saturday Sports Talk, 656-9900, if you'd like to join us. So we have Jonathan Hutton coming up at 9:30 on Titans Radio to talk about the Titans. And you asked about breaking this game down in the last hour, and specifically with Ryan Tannehill, when it comes to him not throwing for 100 yards, when it comes to Derrick Henry getting the bulk of the workload, I'm seeing a big difference between those two games. Against Baltimore, I'm seeing, against New England, I'm seeing a couple mistakes. You had the drop snap. You had the interception on just a pass that he shouldn't have thrown, and no communication between him and the wide receiver. You had the defense having to make stops and really relying on the defense to make stops. And I thought Tennessee actually leaned a little bit too heavily on Derrick Henry, and he got the job done. But I thought it was risky when your offense went totally one-dimensional in the second half and you tried to make a 14-13 halftime lead stand up.
Yep.
Against New England in Foxborough. That's a dangerous game to play. Against Baltimore, Tennessee got some stops. Some huge stops, too. 2 4th-and-1 opportunities for the Ravens in good field position.
Who were 8 for 8 on the season going into that game.
Yeah, 8 for 8 on 4th-down conversion attempts of 1 yard to go or less. One of those was really 4th-and-about-0.5 yard. And the Titans stuffed Lamar Jackson on both of them. I think the Titans had some help at times. The secondary did a great job. Secondary did a great job at knocking down passes and man coverage. Adoree Jackson, Logan Ryan, those guys were fantastic. Kevin Byard and Kenny Vaccaro have become a really nice safety tandem. But I thought the pass rush did its job to force some bad passes. I also thought that drop passes by Ravens receivers really helped the Titans out a ton. The first interception that led to the Titans opening score, really, that's on Mark Andrews. Mark Andrews has to catch that football. Mm-hmm. It was just situations like that that piled up and really hurt the Ravens. But more credit, I think, deserves to go to Tennessee, because Jarrell Casey had a big game. You had Harold Landry getting in the backfield as well. And the Titans secondary played lockdown throughout the entire game and got stops when it needed to. But taking advantage on one of those 4th-down stops, what do the Titans do? They decide to go play action after watching Derrick Henry run and run and run the entire previous weekend. You go down deep on a play action pass and Khalif Raymond comes up with a monster touchdown reception.
And see, I think the play action needs to be implemented a lot more, because in 2 playoff games, Derrick Henry has 64 rushing attempts. All right. You have 96 rushing attempts in the last 3 games, going back to the last week 17 against Houston, where Tennessee needed to win. Henry ran 32 times for 211 yards and 3 touchdowns. So he's been on this roll for quite some time. So you're just going with Henry. You're pounding with Henry. And why not? When you're averaging over 5.5 yards a rush, why not? I have no issue with that at all. It's the playoffs. I know, you know, it's feasibly Derrick Henry can't keep this up. Can't keep this up for four games. You can keep this up. Okay. This is not week 2. This is not week 3 of a 16-game regular season. Okay. For 4 weeks, you can keep this up. If he's healthy, keep feeding him. And so when you're doing that and it's being effective and your defense is playing lights out, for Ryan Tannehill, Arthur Smith, I think, has grown so much as a play caller in his first year as OC. Implement play action more, okay? Tennessee had the big stop on 4th-and-1. Immediately go play action. Find Raymond. Touchdown, 45 yards. Tennessee's on the board again. That was the second touchdown of the first half for Tennessee at Baltimore. So do that more, in my opinion. As far as Ryan Tannehill is concerned, I mean, his stats so far in 2 playoff games, 15-29, 160 yards. He's completing 52% of his passes. He's averaging 5.5 yards a pass, okay? Those are not eye-popping at all. I get all that. It's not. When you have this running game, the way it is, and Arthur Smith is devoted to, you know, run the football. Don't let Ryan Tannehill do too much. Just play with it himself. Just complete the underneath passes. Move the chains, and I think Tannehill's done that. Against Baltimore, 7-14, two of those throws were great throws. One to Jonnu Smith on the side of the end zone, one to Keith Raymond that we just mentioned right there. And against New England had the top-rated defense in the entire league. They were confident in not getting beat deep, not giving up the big play. They ran two high safeties, two man under a lot of the times. And Ryan Tannehill made, as you mentioned, some miscommunication. He made a mistake, threw a pick. So has Ryan Tannehill been good this or great this postseason? No. But has he been effective? I think he's been effective, especially Baltimore. Two touchdowns, also had a rushing touchdown on the game. So, yes, he's going to throw for more than 15 attempts. He's going to get over 100 yards passing. Sooner or later, I agree, it's going to happen. But I wouldn't say, well, I'm just going to discredit Tennessee because Ryan Tannehill can't play. Ryan Tannehill's been playing. He's been playing all season long since he's been coming into the season. You don't lead the NFL in quarterback rating for nothing, okay? He's been playing. So if you're going to discredit Tennessee in this game or in any game, that's fine. Don't put it on Ryan Tannehill because he hadn't done anything in the two playoff games, because he has. He has been effective. He's just been playing his part in this game where Derrick Henry has just been taking over. So, you know, that's been a lot of the talk nationwide, a lot here locally as well, as Ryan Tannehill, until he proves it, you're not going to take him. I mean, he was ultra, ultra effective in that Baltimore game.
It is weird because you have a valuable weapon in A.J. Brown, who has two catches in two playoff games.
And a 1,000-yard receiver as a rookie in the regular season?
Yeah. You have a 1,000-yard receiver on your roster, and he has two catches for 10 yards, 12
yeah,
yards,
I think
something
it's 11
like that?
Yards, yeah.
So here's the thing. I don't want to see Derrick Henry become the non-focal point of the offense, but I do think Tennessee is going to need a little bit more from Ryan Tannehill. And what we saw in the game against the Ravens was they asked more from Tannehill in the first half. But when you build a 22-point lead and you have a running back like Derrick Henry and your defense
you
is making
stops,
off
every play.
Yeah.
Every play. Don't
why,
care.
Why? Because.
Well, why not? Yeah.
Because you go three and out and you run it three times. You run 40 seconds off the clock every time against an offense that is struggling, thinking we've got to score three touchdowns to get back into this game. Well, you take off a chunk of time. Mm-hmm. And I think Vrabel saw, look, I want to run this clock as much as I can. And because you pick up a couple first downs, especially when you have a running back like Derrick Henry that's leading the league in yards after contact and is averaging 5 yards per carry, you know, if you hand it off to him three times, there's a decent chance you're not going three and out, yeah. Which means you're able to continue to run off time. And it helps that, man, if we get him in the open field for a 4 yard gain and he's one-on-one with a corner or an outside linebacker, we might have a first down. Or it's a serious luxury when you're second and seven, you're running it between the tackles and your offensive coordinator doesn't really have to worry about calling a third down play.
Yep.
Because you're picking up first downs on second and seven running between the tackles. Because Derrick Henry's, first of all, you're getting great blocking from your offensive line. Derrick Henry's not seeing anybody until he's 3 yards up the field. And then, well, he's going to break the first tackle. And then he's going to stiff arm the second. And before you know it, you're calling first and 10 again.
Then he's going to find Earl Thomas, talk to him, and then stiff arm him and continue to go.
Yeah.
With Ryan Tannehill and what Derrick Henry's been able to do and all this stuff. So the offense is moving. It's got a specific niche right now. It's got a specific plan, and you continue to move. All right. Did it against New England, the number one defense in the league. Did it against Baltimore, which I believe was the number six defense in the league. You're going up against a defense that, when you look at the stats, in terms of overall team defense, scoring defense, not eye-popping at all in Kansas City, but has been much improved the last half of the season. But this is going to be, on paper, the easiest test for Tennessee's offense. Now, the challenge is, offensively for the Titans, is keeping up with Patrick Mahomes on the other side, and I get all that. So we'll have to see how it all pans out tomorrow. But the story, aside from Derrick Henry, he's the story of the playoffs right now. I'm not discrediting that. But for the Tennessee Titans, Derrick Henry can continue to play his game because of what the defense has been doing. A defense that's been hit or miss all season long, was a top 10 defense earlier in the year, finished 21st in the league, to be completely honest, when it was all said and done, but is playing at that top 10 level right now. Fourth down stops, creating turnovers in the league MVP, bend but not break. How many times, again, one time right before the half in particular that comes to mind, Baltimore was third and long. And they converted, but Tennessee held to a field goal, forcing turnovers, giving up yards, but forcing turnovers, not giving up points, holding New England to 13 points, holding Baltimore, the league's number one offense,
the
to 12 points.
The goal line stand against New England arguably saved Tennessee's season. That is probably the biggest sequence of plays that has happened for Tennessee in the last two games.
It's been incredible. And again, in that New England game, you know, Logan Ryan drops a pick against his former team. Moments later, catches it, pick six, seals the game. I mean, what Tennessee's defense is doing right now, I feel like it's not getting talked about enough. And coupled with Derrick Henry, that is why this team is looking like one of the best teams in the league right now, and it's in the Final Four.
And we talked to Alan Bell of CBS Sportsline, who used to be the NFL editor for 247 Sports, but he was saying the Titans have the makeup of a lot of past Super Bowl champions. They play really good defense, and they run the ball incredibly well. And with the Titans, Ryan Tannehill is going to need to do more. Utilize A.J. Brown and Jonnu Smith. You have weapons at wide receiver now, and I think Corey Davis has improved since Ryan Tannehill has come into the mix. He's made some big catches for Tennessee this year. Tajay Sharpe's a good number three. Before, when you were having to utilize him as the two-man or the one-man in some situations because you didn't have A.J. Brown and Corey Davis was always dropping passes, he was unreliable, Tajay Sharpe is that guy that can get open along the sideline or he can get open over the middle of the field. He continues to move without the ball and does an excellent job after breaking off his routes of trying to get open for his quarterback. It's a reliable target. You have Adam Humphries that's coming back after missing the first two playoff games, so he comes back into the mix. That being said, I don't want Tennessee to become a pass-first offense because they tried to do that. This was the most confusing two-week stretch of the entire season for Tennessee since Tannehill came in. You had Tennessee beating Tampa, which going into that game, Tampa had the top rushing defense in the league. They pounded it out with Henry anyway. Henry had a big game. Tennessee won the game. Following week, you're going up against a Panthers team that doesn't have an elite rush defense but has a very good pass rush. What does Tennessee try to do? Tries to become a pass-first offense. Derrick Henry had two carries in the first half. Tennessee was down big, ended up losing the game by 10. When they started giving the ball to Henry more, they played better. So it needs to be Derrick Henry's offense. I'm just saying you may need to look to Ryan Tannehill to do a little bit more early, which they did against Baltimore, but they built enough of a cushion they didn't have to do anything. No. So it's not that Tannehill can't play. It's that, look, against New England, he didn't have a good game. But against Baltimore, he did exactly what you needed him to do. He threw two touchdown passes. But in the second half, why throw the ball? It was really a matter of that. It's why throw the football? You went into the fourth quarter with a 28-6 lead?
Yeah, exactly. And so when you did when you threw the football in the first half, when you were effective throwing the football in the first half, when you put points on the board twice by throwing the football in the first half, to your point, why throw in the second half? So I think a lot of people just get too busy just looking at the stats. Ryan Tannehill, 7-14, 88 yards. Wow, man, Tennessee's lucky they had Derrick Henry. Well, yeah, but still, he didn't have to. But coupled with Tannehill's play in the postseason, along with what he did in the regular season, what is Tennessee, in your opinion, and not worried about it right now, obviously, bigger fish to fry, how does Tennessee attack Ryan Tannehill this offseason? You and I have had conversations off air where, at least I believe, it'd be great if they kept it short term, but of that annual value. I mean, pay him now, but make it short term is what I think.
2-year contract with a high percentage guaranteed.
Do not need to go the Nick Foles route.
No.
Do not.
Because there is still, I think Tannehill is your guy. See what you can get from Mariota. If he's willing to stay and be the backup, great. I don't think you really need to sign two quarterbacks. I think you can sign
another one.
I would sign Tannehill and draft another guy. Because I think there are going to be some good quarterbacks. There are going to be good backups in this league. Tennessee has other position needs that need a little bit more attention. And I think what you're seeing for the Titans is you have an opportunity to make this right, but you also don't want to screw it up. And for Tennessee, it is a franchise that has really struggled to get consistent quarterback play ever since Steve McNair was gone. Because you've had guys that have had good seasons. Vince Young had some good seasons, but wasn't consistent year in and year out. And then you had the off-the-field issues, and then he was gone. Kerry Collins, during that same period of time, was really good in 2008. Wasn't consistent the following season. Then Jake Locker didn't work out because he was always injured. And Marcus Mariota just hasn't been the guy. So it has been a rotating cast of characters, and then you also throw Ryan Fitzpatrick and Matt Hasselbeck into the fold and just a number of players that
Charlie Whitehurst, don't forget him.
Oh, goodness. Rusty Smith, I think, started a game.
Don't forget my boy. Oh, my goodness. Why am I blanking on his name? My boy from LSU.
Oh, Zach Mettenberger.
Yeah, Mettenberger. Can't forget him. Yeah. Russie Smith. Russie Smith was always that number three quarterback on Tennessee's roster for the longest time. But you're right. I mean, Tennessee's not had consistent quarterback play since Steve McNair. And so you have a good thing going right now. If you're Ryan Tannehill, who's already had a monster payday in Miami, he's already got a big contract at one point in time in his career.
I get that he's going to want to warrant more, but remember that big contract led to him, hey, put up decent numbers. He was decent when he was healthy. Exactly. Let's give him this monster contract.
And he's had a resurgence this year.
Playing in a better system at the same time. Look, do not, the guy's 30, 31 years old. Do not give him a 6-year deal. Do not give him a 4 or 5 year deal. Give him a 2-year contract.
Throw him some
money.
Let
him play it out. Because at the end of the day, it's ultimately 2/3 of a season. That's what he's done for you. And it's been great. But he's also had a better supporting cast than he had in Miami. And I think you should be proud of Ryan Tannehill. You should be really happy if you're a Titans fan. Do not sign him to a long-term deal.
Nope.
Give him 2 years and then try to figure it out from there, because you don't know how long he's going to be able to sustain this level of play. We'll talk to Jonathan Hutton of Titans Radio coming up next. Titans and the Chiefs tomorrow in the AFC Championship game. What does Jonathan think about it? We'll ask him on the other side, 656-9900, right here on Saturday Sports Talk, FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. With Eric Kane, I'm Joel Silverberg. Logan Ward producing this morning from the Budweiser Studios of Cumulus Broadcasting. We hope to connect with Jonathan Hutton of Titans Radio here momentarily as the Titans get ready to take on the Kansas City Chiefs tomorrow at 3:00. And I was just asking you off the air, how much of that 1999 season do you remember?
No, hardly any. Hardly any.
Do you remember anything from the 2002 season, the last time the franchise went to the AFC Championship game?
No, I mean, to be completely honest, the earliest Titan memory I have is, I believe, when Peyton and Steve McNair were co-AFC or co-MVPs.
In 04.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't remember much from when I was a wee little lad. No, I don't remember the last time Tennessee was in the AFC Championship at all. So this is all new.
That AFC run was, there's been a lot of similarities because the Titans started out that year 1-4. And so they won their next game. So they were 2-4, just like they were this season. So that was kind of funny. But that Titans team with McNair started out 1-4. And 2001 was not a great season for them either, because they went 13-3 in back-to-back years in 99-2000, went 7-9 in 2001. And was just kind of came out of nowhere. They were losing to the Browns and the Bengals, which when you were the Titans, that just didn't happen. Because that was when you still had the AFC Central. And then they changed the format in 2002, I believe, when the Texans joined the fray. And then you had the formation of the AFC South. And Titans start out 1-4, go on a 5-game win streak, lose a game, go on another 5-game win streak. And they go from 1-4 to actually being the 2 seed in the AFC. So they got a first round bye, won a playoff game, lost to the Raiders in the AFC Championship game. The Raiders went on to lose to the Bucs in the Super Bowl. But just a wild season. And one game in particular I really remember about that year was, I believe they were playing the Giants and were down by like 15 in the fourth quarter, score one touchdown, score another, and then you have to get the 2-point conversion. And the 2-point play is just brilliant because McNair steps back to pass. They did like a 5-receiver set. George might have been in the backfield, but I'm not sure. Takes one step back, cuts the draw. Cuts the QB draw, ties the game, and then they won it in overtime. So, and just a great season. It was games like that of scrapping out close games against good teams, and they went on to go to the AFC Championship game, and that was quite the season. And for Tennessee in 1999, it kind of came out of nowhere, because as the Oilers, the years before that, they went 8-8 in back-to-back years.
Yeah.
And the first game of the season, they're losing to the Bengals. And then you have to kick a game-winning field goal to win it. And so it's like, all right, how good is this team really going to be? Because the Bengals aren't highly respected and stuff like that. So is it going to be another mediocre 8-8 season? Like, new team, woo. And then suddenly you beat the Jags, which were a really good team that year. Team's 3-0. And suddenly, before you know it, then you get this big win in the middle of the season against the Rams, which ended up being a Super Bowl preview. And the Titans were up 21-0. Before the Rams came back, Titans went ahead, kicked a field goal, and then the Rams missed a field goal at the end of the game. And suddenly, the Titans had just knocked off the last remaining undefeated team in the NFL and, you know, went on to be 13-3, beat the Jags three times. The crazy sequence where you're down 14-7, you score a touchdown, kick a field goal, you're up 17-14, you get the safety on Mark Brunell, and then Derek Mason takes the ensuing punt back for a touchdown.
Yep.
And that essentially ices the game. And then, of course, the iconic run with Mike Keith's call of the long run that he had, the 50-yard run that set up the final game-ending touchdown. Just a lot of great memories from that season in 1999. And then 2002, the last time that the team made the AFC Championship game. But it's an exciting time if you're a Titans fan, because it's been a while. Because before 2 years ago, the franchise hadn't won a playoff game since 2004 and hadn't been to the playoffs since, 2008?
I remember 08 very, very... No, well, it was in the playoffs 2 years ago.
Before 2 years ago, won a playoff game since 2004. And before 2 years ago, had not.
I remember the 2008 season very well. Tennessee jumped out. I mean, it went. We talked about this. Talked about this the other day. 9-0, 10-0, and then it ended up being 13-3. It was the number one seed in the AFC. Went to the playoffs in the divisional round. Baltimore got them, and so that's why last week was so the sweet revenge. And Baltimore also got them back in 2000, and so that's why that was a lot of fun. Kind of the tables were reversed. Last week. And so I remember that season very, very distinctly. I remember, obviously, I remember the 2017 season because I went to the last two games of the season. I remember I went on Christmas Eve to see Tennessee lose against the Rams and Todd Gurley. And then I went back on New Year's Eve, or I think it was the 30th, and Tennessee handled business against the Jacksonville Jaguars to get into the playoffs, and it was just so cold. It was freezing, and Derrick Henry returned a long screen for a touchdown there. So the last, I've seen a couple of big games for the Tennessee Titans, but, going back, I don't remember hardly anything back from the early 2000s. That's why this is so much fun for me. That's why, it's really exciting, and, I mean, I'm a fan of the Tennessee Titans, don't get me wrong, but, you also got to look at it through, an analytical perspective when we're, analyzing these games. And it's been really impressive what the team's done so far, and the game plan that Arthur Smith has adapted, coupled with the good defensive play. So I this team could be the team in the NFL right now.
Derrick Henry, the first Titans running back to win the rushing title since Chris Johnson did it in 2009. If Henry were to win some sort of award, he won't win the MVP, but if there was the rushing title, it's really the first sort of NFL award that a player has won for on-field performance since that 2009 season. You had some stuff before that. You had Vince Young winning Offensive Rookie of the Year. Steve McNair won the MVP. Javon Kearse, the year the Titans made the Super Bowl, was the Defensive Rookie of the Year. But there have not been a ton of accolades within this franchise, especially in the past decade. Really nothing.
Yeah.
Now, you've had some Pro Bowl selections. You've had some guys that have continued to be towards the top of the league in their respective field. Kevin Byard has led the league in interceptions since he entered the league. Brett Kern has consistently been one of the best punters in the NFL. But those aren't things that a franchise can really establish a solid foundation on, and now you've got something here, and you're just not in this position very often. I mean, Tennessee still hasn't had a 10-win regular season since that 2008 campaign, and that's a team that's gone 9-7 the last 4 years, but has not won 10 games, hasn't even gone 10-6 at least, or better, since they went 13-3 in 2008.
And that's why I love the NFL game so much, and I used to be way more pro NFL than I was college football, and I know I'm in the minority there, but you have a sixth seed in the National Football League that is a game away from playing in the Super Bowl, that is a game away that can win the whole thing, because these are pros. Everyone's good.
And when you get to conference championship weekend, I mean, when you have a sixth seed that goes on a run like this, throw the records out the books.
Exactly. If you had a sixth seed in college football right now, and this is an argument for another day, this year they're getting waxed. All right. That's just how it is. And we can talk about this next week. I know that's a hot topic, but that's why the NFL is so much fun, because, the Giants went on their run. The Green Bay Packers with Aaron Rodgers when it won a Super Bowl went on that run for the sixth seed, or it was a wild card at least. Anything can happen. And so you're right. When you get to this point in the postseason, it doesn't matter what your record was. It's all about what's going on right now. I mean, the Washington Nationals scraping past, getting in the wild card. But, I mean, from game one in the postseason, once Washington won the wild card game and advanced on, everyone's counting them out. I'm saying Washington has pitching enough to make it to a World Series. And Tennessee has a run game and a defense. And so it's kind of the same thing.
I'm still looking back. And it has happened. The the Titans could be the third six seed in the NFL current playoff format, just the third team to reach the Super Bowl if it were to win tomorrow. The Titans are just the first wild card team, not a team that played in the wild card round. So I'm not talking about a three seed or a four seed. They are the first wild card team to make a conference championship game since the 2013 season. Can you name the franchise that did it?
Is it the AFC?
No.
The Packers?
The 49ers, as a five seed, went to Green Bay, beat the Packers, went to Carolina, beat the Panthers, and then lost to Seattle in the NFC Championship game. That was the, "Hi, I'm Richard Sherman, I'm going to scare the crap out of Aaron Andrews" game. That was Richard Sherman calling out Crabtree. Seattle won the game 23-17 and then destroyed Denver in the Super Bowl. So yeah, San Francisco was a five seed and made the NFC Championship game. But because lately we've seen a lot of 1-2 matchups in both conferences. We've seen a lot of 1-2s and 1-3s. So you're seeing the higher seeded teams do it. And it kind of, you know, was like, all right, where's the parity lately? We kind of had a decade where a lot of the favorites were taking care of business in the postseason, and Tennessee. So the first team to do it in six seasons, to be a wild card team, to get in as a wild card team and then make the conference championship game. Really, really good run for Tennessee. And I think when you get to this point, you just throw the kitchen sink at everything.
So what does Tennessee need to do? I know you're going to pick Kansas City in this ball game, as am I, but you know, what does Tennessee need to do in order to win this football game?
Play mistake-free football and don't give up a ton of big plays.
You think Tennessee covers?
Yeah. Is it still 7.5?
It was last night. I think Tennessee covers.
If it's 7.5,
well,
I think Tennessee can cover that just because of the type of team that the Titans are. They just don't lose a ton of games in lopsided fashion.
7.
Yeah, I think Tennessee covers that.
I do too. Tennessee, shrink the game. I've said it a couple weeks in a row now. Just shrink the game. Continue doing what you're doing with Derrick Henry. Let the defense play. I mean, Patrick Mahomes is going to get his. That offense is potent. You've got Travis Kelce. You've got Tyreek Hill. You've got Sammy Watkins. You've got some running backs that's been effective. Bend but not break. Try to create some turnovers. Run the ball with Derrick Henry. Continue to be efficient. Manage the clock. Control the clock. And try to keep the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hand as much as you can. Shrink the game and see where you are when it's all said and done. I mean, I think it's going to be a close game. Tennessee, again, has already beaten Kansas City this year. I know you can't hold everything on that, but Derrick Henry had 188 yards rushing against the Chiefs already this year. What's to say he can't do it again? Tennessee blocked what would have been a game-winning field goal to preserve the win. You know, that sometimes it takes acts like that to pull off a win. Tennessee did score in that ball game. Adam Humphries, who's going to be questionable for this ball game, scored with 22 seconds left from Ryan Tannehill to take the lead in that ball game. So there were some late game heroics, don't get me wrong, but Tennessee did a lot of good things against Kansas City already this year. But that defense needs to slow the Kansas City offense down and try to limit Patrick Mahomes to below 30 points.
I think both teams are a lot different too.
Oh yeah.
From what we saw, I think Henry has taken a greater role in the offense. I think Tannehill understands where he is within the offense a little bit more now. I think the Chiefs' defense is significantly improved. And the offense is clicking again with Mahomes not dealing with the after effects of the injury.
Chiefs defense is a lot better, for sure.
Without a doubt. Tennessee has not lost a game by more than two scores all season. The 16-0 loss that they suffered to Denver is the widest margin, but that is still technically a two-possession game.
Yep.
But again, that was with Marcus Mariota at quarterback. And Tennessee has not lost a game by more than two scores since November of 2018, when it lost to Houston by 17 on Monday Night Football. That was the infamous game where, hey, it's fourth and goal at the one. Let's run it up the middle with Luke freaking Stalker,
who has never had a carry in his career. I don't believe.
Had not had a rushing attempt since he was a senior in high school. Luke Stalker is 31 years old. So it's just, you know. And so Vrabel has had to move on from that. He's had to grow from being the guy that has made some of those stupid decisions. And he rolled the dice a couple of times in this postseason, but it paid off. And he's taking more calculated risks instead of just saying, hey, let's try to just throw them off their game by doing something crazy. That doesn't work in the NFL. Crazy does not work in the NFL. Mike Leach would not succeed in the NFL. And Bill O'Brien tried to get crazy last week against the Chiefs, and it backfired severely. because everything escalated in the wrong direction right after that. We will come back. We will continue to talk more Titans. The Vols have a game coming up tonight against the Vanderbilt Commodores at 6 o'clock. Coverage will start at 5:30 right here on The Sports Animal. With Eric Kane, I'm Joel Silverberg. Final segment coming up next on FM 99.1, The Sports Animal.
A couple minutes left here on this edition of Saturday Sports Talk. Eric Kane, Joel Silverberg, Logan Ward alongside. Big game for the Tennessee Titans tomorrow in the AFC Championship. Been breaking down that matchup against the Kansas City Chiefs. Kicks off at 3:05, and we will know who will be going to the Super Bowl at the conclusion of Sunday. But before that, we have a Tennessee basketball game tonight in the Mid-States at Vanderbilt. Brick Barnes' first chance to go up against Jerry Stackhouse in this in-state rivalry.
And with Tennessee having the opportunity to get back on the winning track, go 3-2, this is a game that Tennessee needs to win. Aaron Nesmith is not playing and likely out for the season, dealing with a stress fracture in his foot. And after Tennessee lost to Georgia over the weekend, lost to Georgia on Wednesday, just saw, look, this is a flawed basketball team. And I thought Uroš Plavšić, you know, there's nothing really conclusive about what I saw in his debut. His baby hook shot, just he kept leaving it short, and it didn't look comfortable coming off his hand. Saw one outlet describe it as a nervous debut for him, and I think that's fair. I think just trying to get acclimated, that's a tough spot to make your debut into. In the middle of a Georgia game.
He admitted he was nervous going into it.
In Stegman, where Anthony Edwards, the future, you know, a future top three pick in the NBA draft, is having a career day. I mean, he came into the game averaging 18 points. He had 20 in the first half. So Tennessee going on the road tonight should take care of business against a Vanderbilt team that has not won a conference game in the past season and a half. And despite the fact that they're playing at home, they're without their leading scorer.
Aaron Nesmith out. Who steps up? It's been Saban Lee. Primarily off the bench has been Saban Lee, leading that team in scoring, 15 points per game, in steals, and assists as well. Tennessee will have to slow down him. Rick Barnes said yesterday that Saban Lee's one of the hardest guys to cover in the entire country. He gave Jerry Stackhouse credit for getting Lee ready to step up into that role when Nesmith went out, and said that Vanderbilt really hasn't changed much because you can't really afford to change your identity at this point in the season. Now, Tennessee has had to start over a number of times just because of personnel issues. But Rick Barnes said Vanderbilt really hasn't changed much of who they are, even without Nesmith. But it's been Saban Lee and a couple others that have really stepped up to fill the void.
And Maxwell Evans, just if they can get him going consistently, because he tied a career high 16 points in the first half against Arkansas the other night. He finished the game with 16 points. Yep. So that's no good. And then Vanderbilt actually hung around in that game for about a half. And then with Evans not contributing offensively anymore, fell apart, lost the game by 20. And Arkansas is a really good team, but Vanderbilt, their half-court offense, they just get stagnant. They try to drive, and instead of driving and kicking, they drive and stop looking around. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot of flow to their offense. It's just a flawed basketball team right now. And while Tennessee has its own share of issues, this is not a game you want to lose, where Vanderbilt, with a first-year head coach, doesn't have its leading scorer and hasn't won a conference game in what? A 23-game losing streak in the SEC. So this is not a time for Tennessee to drop a game that it shouldn't. It's going to at some point this season. And that's just the growing pains of trying to replace Lamonte Turner and losing all the talent that you did from a year ago. But this is a game that Tennessee should be able to walk into Nashville and walk out of Memorial Gymnasium with a win.
Yeah, not to mention you don't want to go 0-2 in state. Tennessee's already 0-1 yeah. in state. Don't want to go 0-2 in state. But you're exactly right. This is a game.
Well, you have the win over Chattanooga.
You do have the win over Chattanooga. I did forget about that. But anyway, Tennessee needs this win for sure, and I think it's a great opportunity to get Euro some more minutes and get more comfortable.
Okay, so we got about a minute left in the show. And real quick, final picks for tomorrow. Titans, Chiefs?
Kansas City.
Same. 49ers, same. Packers.
San Fran.
Same.
We're boring.
Yeah. Okay, so you and I are both play-by-play announcers.
Yep.
You've had a lot of baseball experience. You've done some basketball too, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. I did some basketball when I was in college. There's a high school broadcaster, not going to say his name, but he, at the end of this clip, the color analyst gets really excited about this massive dunk in a high school game. The thing is that the play-by-play announcer is talking about a personal story and botches it, and the color analyst goes all in at the end. And this is just something for future broadcasters. Pay attention to the game. Don't get too much about talking about the death of your dog.
Well, and then there's one one more gone, but not forgotten. And that's our sweet Lucy. At the age of 12, she was run over in our driveway.
Oh, like that? Was she run over like
that? That's what the color analyst says. Was she run over like that? To the play-by-play announcer who is mourning the death of his dog that just got run over by a car.
Not knowing the context of this, number one, play-by-play announcer, why even bring that on air? That was no need for it, but that was something. Goodness.
He had mentioned earlier in the game that his dog had just been run over by a car. And on this massive dunk, and this high school player, to his credit, just posterizes the opponent. Like that? Like was she that? Run over like that?
He said, we lost this week. Oh, yeah.
I realize that we still have 11 and a half months to go. That is the number one play-by-play call of the year.
That was good.
We're going to have some other ones, but that right there. Was she run over like that? I love it. I just wanted to show that to you. Credit to Matthew Peterson, the Ice Bears color analyst, for pointing that out to me last night. Because he was talking about, you know, I just really appreciate the fact that you don't do this.
Well, yeah.
And I appreciate the fact that he doesn't set me up for stuff like that. And we've had some memories. I just wanted to share that with you all. Let's have a laugh this weekend. Tennessee playing Vanderbilt tonight at 6. Again, 5:30 is when the Tennessee tip-off show will take place. For more NFL talk tomorrow from 10 to 12:30 from Parkside Grill, John Wilkerson in the panel will have the preview of the conference championships, a recap of what happened in the divisional round. Should be a big weekend. Appreciate you all for tuning in. We're going to take a 166-hour break. We'll be back next Saturday morning. Eric, thank you. Logan, thank you. And thank you for listening. This has been Saturday Sports Talk on The Sports Animal.